Cultivate Simple,
Episode 4, Back to Ohio.
There you go.
Welcome to Cultivate Simple, Episode 4. An honest and unrehearsed discussion about trying to live a more simple life. We're in the middle of the hurricane and the leaves are blowing all around us, and I can barely see because the rain is pelting me and
not really. But this is
you have that L.L. Bean jacket.
That's right. Since we live in Maine, it is a good thing I have the L.L. Bean jacket. This episode is not brought to you by L.L. Bean, because L.L. Bean, if you are listening, just approach us. We'll talk. But no, this is Cultivate Simple, an honest and unrehearsed discussion about trying to live a more simple life. And this is episode 4. And we are sort of preparing for Hurricane Sandy. Is that her name?
I think so.
And she's, I think we're going to be fine.
I think everybody blows it all out of proportion.
Yeah, as I look at the forecasts and the models that the weather guys are showing, it really seems like Ohio, where we used to be, is going to get worse weather than we are here in Maine. But we shall see. We did make some preparations, and Susie stored up some water for us, and this definitely makes it a, what do you call this, like a time, or a, this dates this podcast.
Yeah, it does.
I'll
put a link in the show notes. I did write, oddly enough, I wrote an article on the Your Date blog at Ethel last September about preparing your emergency kit and just, you know, a few things you can do to kind of be prepared for all kinds of situations. And that's kind of the beauty of living a simple life, is you are prepared pretty much all the time for just about anything. We did put some water in some canning jars just in case, but we do have a little well down below that we can go dip water out of, and we have a water filter that we can put it through. So, you know, other than taking some sponge baths if the electric goes out and probably not being able to post to the blog, life should go on pretty much as normal.
Yeah, if the blog goes dark, which actually through the iPad we have internet, so as long as the cell towers are still up, which they usually are in emergency, we should be able to post and keep you updated. And that's another reason
See, I was looking forward to a vacation.
Oh, I was just kidding.
I was going to pretend the hurricane knocked out our electric, even though it didn't.
Oh no, the storm. Oh, the wind is blowing again, and I think we're going to be down for a few days. Oh no. All right, enough of that. So today we wanted to talk a little bit more about us, because that's a topic we know a lot about, and we're trying.
And a topic we get lots of questions about.
Yeah, which is good. And don't think that this podcast is just going to be us talking about us, because we have a lot of topic ideas, and you, the listeners, you are giving us a lot more ideas, and so we will be covering those in future episodes. But we're doing something a little bit different tonight. I wanted to start you off with a warning. If we seem a little tired, it's because we have had a crazy week. By the way, I'm Mr. Chiotes Brian, and that's Susie over there. And I used the cool sound effect in the beginning. It throws me all off. Anyway, so we went to Ohio. Back home, or what used to be our home, and spent some time with Susie's family. And we also went over to our old house, which we're still trying to sell, and cleaned it up a little bit. And it was just, it was interesting getting a different perspective, going back there and seeing everything, you know, only 1 month removed, but seeing how things have changed, especially around our house, Since all of our stuff is gone, it just doesn't seem like our home anymore. And so we're pretty anxious to sell that. But that also got us thinking about, I guess you could say, about our lives and just about sort of where we've come from. And so that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today, is just our history, our past.
It's like a little backstory kind of about
Consider this, we should have started out with this in episode one, but we're doing it in episode four, so this is like a flashback in the middle of the movie. It's very Quentin Tarantino, you know, you start with the end and end with the beginning. But to start off the podcast, we've got something a little special. As you can tell from the intro, we had some fun with our two nieces, our two oldest nieces, Hannah and Heidi. And
this was Hannah's idea. She sent me an email last week telling me how awesome it would be if we could do a podcast that was all about, like, that was all interviewing her and her siblings and my sister and maybe my parents about what it's like to be a relative of the Morrises, which we thought was kind of funny. So we decided we would sit them down and ask them a few questions and let them ask us a few questions. So,
and I actually, that was about a half hour of audio, which was a lot of fun. And, you know, a lot of it was the girls acting silly. So I actually edited that down, and that's what you're about to hear. And so if you want to hear the whole thing, I think, I should have really checked this before we started recording, but I think that there's a way that I can actually post that on the Cultivate Simple site. So if you go to the post with show notes, you should see another audio file. There'll be the podcast file and then another audio file. And if you you want to
Cultivate Simple 4.5.
Yeah, 4.A or something. So if you want to listen to the whole interview with Hannah and Heidi, and it gets silly, and there was some, you know, goofy stuff, and us coaching, I'm not going to edit it at all. It's just going to be raw audio. So if you want to listen to that, it's there. But for now, here is the interview that we had with our nieces, Hannah and Heidi.
Tell me your name, your age, and your grade, and one interesting thing about yourself you think people might want to know.
I'm Hannah Stoller. I'm 11. I'm in fifth grade, and the one thing interesting fact about myself is that I'm homeschooled. I stay at home, and my mom does school at home with us. So we don't go to public school, so we're homeschooled.
Okay, now how about the other one sitting over there? Go ahead.
I'm Heidi Stoller, Hannah's sister, and I'm 9 and in the fifth grade because when I was 4, I did kindergarten along with my sister. And one interesting fact is that I really love horses, and I really wish I had one, but we live in town, so that's out of the question.
And what's your favorite horse? You know a lot about horses.
I like Arabians and Thoroughbreds.
All right, so these are our nieces. We also have a nephew and another little niece, but they thought watching a video would be much more fun than doing a podcast. So they're not joining us today. But our nieces, Hannah and Heidi, really wanted to ask us a few questions. They thought it would be great to be on the podcast today.
My questions are for both of you. So, what is it like blogging and things like that?
It's really not that exciting, but I enjoy doing it. It's a great way to be creative and to write and to do things. It's kind of like keeping a journal or a diary. So it's just doing it online where other people can read it. So it's kind of weird that other people read it sometimes, but
when you podcast, do you ever stop to think of what to say? Like forget your lines or something?
Not really. We usually just sit down and talk since we don't usually plan out a lot of what we're going to say. We just kind of sit down and chat.
We usually start off with notes just to make sure that we stay on track, because I have a tendency to ramble. And so if I don't have notes, then, and, you know, don't have a wife that's staring at me, you know, telling me that I'm going on a little too much, then, yeah, we get off track. So we don't plan too much, though, and so we don't have lines to forget.
Ah.
When you are in the garden, do your pets ever, like, come up and bug you?
Not often. They're usually walking around, and sometimes Dexter and the little cat come up and rub on my legs, but not generally. They're usually just hanging around on the outskirts, you know, being good companions and catching mice.
Have you ever fed Lucy, like, some tinctures or some herbs or something from your garden?
Yes, I have. She gets herbs all the time. She especially, a couple weeks ago, she got into the chicken food and had an allergic reaction, so I gave her some astragalus tincture that I had made. But yeah, she likes herbs.
Have you ever done something just so that you could vlog about it, or did you actually want to do it?
Usually I want to, but blogging about it is better motivation to actually do it and to sometimes spend the money to do it. So I don't know if I've ever done it just to blog about it, but blogging about it's always good motivation to do some of the things that I want to do.
Have you ever run out of things to blog about? Like, nothing on that day to blog about?
Yes, every now and then I have those days, and usually I put up a picture of Dexter, and everybody's happy with that because he's so cute.
Aww.
So then how do you come up with stuff to blog about?
Usually I come up with ideas of, it depends, what I'm doing outside, what I'm planting, what I'm harvesting, just things that are going on that day, that week. I get a lot of inspiration from all the books that I read. But yeah, it's just one of those, it's usually just kind of a journal, so it's about what I'm doing at that time. So yeah, so that's how I come up with the topics.
When you went to Maine, is there something you found out that you hadn't, like, something good that you hadn't planned on, like, finding out?
Yeah, we ended up, we're meeting tons of great new people, and we figured we would, but we didn't know that we would meet a lot of great new people right away, so that's been really great, you know. All right, so now we have some questions for Miss Hannah.
Okay.
So, Miss Hannah, what's your favorite garden plant?
I'd have to say mint, because I like to go outside. We have some in our yard, but Dad accidentally sprayed it with some poison, so I'm not allowed to eat it anymore. But I am allowed to pick it up, and I like squishing it between my fingers, rolling it, and then sniffing it. It smells so good. Sometimes I just want to take it into my room and lay it on my dresser, but unfortunately we can't because we're selling our home.
What's your favorite vegetable and what's your least favorite vegetable and why?
Sweet potatoes, because sometimes Mom likes to make sweet potatoes and regular potatoes because I like them all mashed up. My least favorite, can I have at least three?
Three least favorites? All right, you
green
can have
peppers,
three.
Onions, and any regular peppers.
Any,
I do not
so
like
any peppers you don't like.
Those.
And you don't like onions?
No, I have no.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
I do not like that.
How can you be a member of this family and not like onions?
Aunt Susie, am I allowed to be a picky eater?
I don't think you're a member of this family. You must be adopted.
No, I am not.
So adopted. You guys have a big garden, right? How big would you say your garden is?
3.5 acres, maybe.
one
third of an acre.
Oh, okay.
I'm confused. It's very, 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 very big.
You were pretty close, Hannah. I'm sure it feels like 3.5 acres when you're hoeing, right?
We don't hoe. We weed.
Oh, you weed by hand on your hands and knees, right?
Yes, and that is
like
my
Cinderella.
Most favorite chore. I do not like that, especially because now we have thistles. But fortunately, we are not doing it next year. Yes.
So what do you like about gardening?
I like getting the food out. I like, well, the one thing I like is being able to pick corn without getting those leaves on my arms. They just make my arms really itchy. It is, they're really itchy.
So, what animal do you think Aunt Susie and Uncle Brian should get next?
A cow, that's easy. So they can make their own cheese and butter.
Oh, do you have any idea what kind of cow? Have you done any research on this topic?
No, maybe a Jersey.
All right. So, what kind of animals do you guys have?
We have a guinea pig, and a dog that my grandma keeps for us because my dad doesn't like dogs. But the guinea pig is very interesting because she is very, 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 very fat and likes to squeak in the middle of school or when my mom is peeling carrots. You can't feed her potato peelings because they can be very poisonous to her. She's come to know the sound of mom peeling carrots. So when mom's peeling carrots, there's that certain sound of carrots that she likes to squeak. She doesn't do it with potatoes. She
does
it
carrots, huh?
Just carrots. She knows smart. That sound.
What else does she like from the garden? I know grandma grows something in the garden that your guinea pig really likes. What is it?
Carrot tops.
And?
Parsley.
That's right.
She had a daughter, but she unfortunately died. She was my favorite one.
And what was her name?
Beatrice.
And what's your guinea pig now's name?
Patch. You did a blog post about Beatrice.
Yeah.
One time.
Yep.
Because I did a Christmas present about her for Grandpa.
So is there anything else you'd like to tell
our
listeners here on the podcast?
Not really,
Do you have any other stories you want to share? Some fun things you've done with Uncle Brian and Aunt Susie?
Yeah, I have this one funny story. One day, it was my birthday, and they decided, Hannah, I had gotten a certificate for Chuck E. Cheese, and so we had decided, that I would spend the night at their house with Heidi after we went to Chuck E. Cheese, and I was, like, 6, maybe 7? I have no idea.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I was very young, and we were sleeping on a blow-up bed, and Aunt Susie and Uncle Brian had locked Lucy in the office. But they tell me now that the office lock doesn't really work. Well, she unlocked it somehow and got to the foot of the blow-up bed, and we woke up the next morning to see Lucy sitting there, and I was absolutely horrified and surprised, and I was so very, very surprised, and I would not believe Lucy did regularly do that because she has never opened a door before and never will.
Again.
Yes.
I wonder how that happened.
I have no
idea. It couldn't be little children. Let her out. No
way, Jose. I was sleeping the whole
time. Lucy unlocked the door all by herself and got out of the office.
Yes, she did. And the funny thing is whenever we visit, the cats go down to the basement. But when we are here at Grandma's house, Tommy likes to come over because I feed him snacks. A lot of snacks. Me too.
So any stories you want to share, Heidi? I know you have lots of stories.
Like my sister told you, I went along to Chuck E. Cheese and played about a zillion horse games in a row.
You guys loved that, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. Last month we went to Beulah Beach and we swam and we pretty much had it all to ourselves and we had lots of fun.
No, this was at Lake Erie.
Lake Erie, Beulah Beach. Okay. And we came home after spending one night, and the day after we came home, we went to Kentucky to visit my grandpa.
Which is my dad.
Yeah. Because he's a professor at Kentucky University.
College.
And we spent 2 nights there, and we had some fun, and we went around and did stuff.
We went to the family cemetery.
And then we went home.
So what do you think about long car rides? Do you like them?
No.
How long was the ride down to Kentucky?
Five.
5 hours? And what did you do during those 5 hours?
We read, we listened to a tape maybe once or twice.
You like to read, don't you?
Yes, but I don't get much out of it when we're in the car.
No, it's hard to read in the car.
We also listened to Jackie Velasquez.
We listened, we hooked my sister's iPod up to it and listened to some songs and some audio and stuff. Pretty much we talked about when we'd get there and what we'd do.
I bet you talked about gardening, huh?
No.
That's... So, what's your favorite garden plant, Heidi?
Maybe yellow persimmon tomato plant.
Oh, that's right. You love tomatoes, especially the yellow persimmon tomato, huh? And yeah. what's your favorite vegetable and your least favorite vegetable and why?
My least, I don't know if I have a least favorite.
You're pretty adventurous, huh?
But my favorite is cabbage.
You like cabbage?
Yeah.
You even like sauerkraut, don't you?
Yeah, I like...
And you like pickled beets, too.
Yeah, and I like green peppers and yellow persimmon tomatoes and cauliflower and broccoli. I like a lot of veggies.
You have a lot of similar tastes that I do. I like a lot of veggies, too. So do you like to garden? You guys have a big garden. Do you love going out and working in the garden, or do you hate it?
Well...
And what parts do you like? What parts do you dislike?
I like the beginning parts of digging rows and planting and covering up. And sometimes I like watering. Sometimes I like spreading our lawn clippings around the plants. And I dislike weeding and picking and stuff like that. I don't like working in the hot sun.
All right. Well, thank you, ladies, for being with us today. We definitely appreciate it. I'm sure our listeners will really enjoy hearing from you guys.
Thank you for letting us come. We really enjoyed it.
I don't know if Mr. Chiotz wants to say anything, but no, he's shaking his head no. I don't know the send-off.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
So those were our nieces, Hannah and Heidi, and as you can tell, they are going to be podcast stars in the future. I don't know what they'll do a podcast about. I'm sure Heidi would do one about horses.
Yes.
She just absolutely loves horses, and Hannah would just...
Hannah's would be dramatic renditions of stories, probably.
That's true.
She likes to tell stories kind of dramatically.
Yeah.
That's kind of her thing, and she loves to read. So.
Yeah. She takes after her Aunt Susie in that way, only you don't like fiction and she loves it.
Yeah, and I'm not much of a drama person, and she really is.
Right. So they asked us a few questions about just different things about gardening and about our past and how old we are and that kind of thing. So we wanted to expand on that a little bit and talk about our past and kind of what has brought us to this point. So... Suze, why don't you start out? Where were you born?
Well, I have a bit of a different story than many people. I was actually born in Colombia, South America. My parents are Americans, and they happened to be there working for their jobs. They're missionaries. So they spent a couple years in Costa Rica, which is where my sister was born, studying Spanish, and then they moved out into the jungle and lived there for a couple years. And then right before I was born, they moved into the city because they, you know, wanted to have a baby in a place where there was a hospital. So I grew up in South America, a whole different environment than the Midwest or the Northeast here, which was interesting. I mean, I love all the food. It's just a completely different experience as far as marketplaces and the vegetables you eat and the fruits that you eat. We had a banana plant in our front flower bed that would produce bananas sometimes, but it seems like they always got stolen right before we were going to pick the whole big bunch. And then we had a huge papaya tree in the backyard that got really tall, and it had, you know, just beautiful papayas on it. But then the tree got so tall and the papayas were so big that when they would drop off the tree, and the tree was taller than our two-story house, and my dad was afraid one of the papayas was going to kill one of us kids when it dropped, so he finally cut the tree down. But yeah, I mean, I grew up with mangoes and yuca and all kinds of wonderful things that
I can't get very easily in Ohio, which is kind of difficult sometimes.
Or in Maine.
When you really want a good sancocho, but...
It was kind of funny, too, because whenever there's something that's been sitting on the counter for a couple hours or something that's got a questionable smell to it, I always say, you know, is this still good? And she said, well, in Colombia, they just leave it out for days and then they eat it. So, you know, so we do a lot of Colombian things. And I've learned to love the food, too. I just, yeah, she, whenever we can find it, she gets it and cooks it. And it's just, it's wonderful. So did you guys have a garden down there, or is that something that even Colombians do?
We didn't have like an edible garden as far as that is concerned, besides the banana plant and the papaya tree. We had a really tiny front garden, and it just had a few plants in it. Basically, the banana plant for a long time was about it, and there was a big hurricane plant that kind of grew up the front of the house. And then in the back, we had the patio was kind of paved, so there wasn't really a lot of space for plants. We did have a planter along one wall, and my mom had all kinds of lush tropical things planted there, hibiscus plants and just all of those things that you usually see in funeral arrangements up here, you know, like those little funeral planters with all those little green plants. Those were all growing, you know, and they were all massive in our back patio, and then the big papaya tree. But we didn't have a ton of space. We did have, my dad had a bunch of staghorn ferns. We had a mimosa tree in the front. And my mom always had tons of cactuses and all kinds of little tropical things on the balcony. But
because where you lived in Colombia, it's subtropic. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah. It's never gets below 70 degrees, I don't think. Barely. If it did get down to 70, we were all wearing wool sweaters because we thought it was freezing. Because, it, you know, I mean, it. The average was, you know, mid-90s or so. So yeah, I mean, it was pretty tropical as far as that's concerned.
And then every... What is it? Every 3 years you would come back to the States to visit and spend a year? Your dad would spend traveling?
Yeah, we would live 3 years in Colombia, and then we'd come back up here to the States, and we would spend a year here. And we always came back to the same town in northeastern Ohio, which was the town my dad grew up in. So we'd come back and go to public school, and we'd kind of jump back in with all of our friends we had had, you know, 4 years previously. And my grandparents lived there, so we would hang out with them a lot. And we did often have a garden up here. My grandparents lived kind of out in the country on, I don't know, an acre or two. You know, it's like one of those, not a huge country place, but a decent place out in the country. And they had a big garden that we would grow a lot of stuff in, potatoes, corn, all that kind of, you know, I mean, your typical Midwestern edible garden. My grandparents also had tons of apple trees and stuff, and we would use the apples to make applesauce. And so yeah, we did a lot of edible gardening, and my mom did some canning and that kind of thing. My dad hunted, so we ate venison. So yeah, I mean, it was pretty traditional Midwestern American as far as that's concerned when we were here in the States. So it was kind of an interesting, I don't know, an interesting kind of other side of a coin. I mean, it's really, they're quite opposite if you think about it, but...
So
it seemed normal to me.
When you were a kid and you were doing the gardening here in the States, did you enjoy that? Did you like it at that time? And were you paying attention and knowing that in the future you were going to be blogging about this?
I didn't have any idea I'd become a gardener. I don't remember hating gardening. I hated like hoeing the garden and weeding and but I loved planting. My mom would always let us pick out something we would get to plant every year. And I remember one year I chose blue corn and blue potatoes and everything blue I could find in the seed catalog. And I remember once my sister's choice was ground cherries, which was like one of the first times for us to grow it, I think. But I remember loving to pick out flowers with my mom at the greenhouse and plant them in the front flower bed. And I always liked the coxcomb and a few of those really interesting, weird kind of plants when I was a little kid.
We need to find that picture of you watering the...
The amaryllis?
Yeah, on the front porch. Yeah. We'll post that. And I say that, and I need to make a note about that because I didn't post the picture of Andrew and Crystal last week. I remembered this morning, so I'll go back and edit that. But anyway, yeah, we can post that picture of you as a little kid watering because it's a cute little picture. So what made you want to garden then? How did you transition into this? Into what our life has become?
Professional. I don't know. It's really weird. When we first bought our house, every plant that was in the flower bed were plants that I really hated. You remember that?
I came home one day from the office and she had used our sawzall to cut down an arborvitae that was...
planted too close to the house and it was too big.
Yes.
And it was really ugly.
And every time she saw it, she said, "I hate that." And so one day I come home from the office and...
I had cut it down. And the rest of the plants were rhododendrons, mm-hmm. which for some reason I also especially dislike rhododendrons. I don't know why. I mean, there are probably some pretty ones out there, but I just really don't like them. And I also do not like arborvitaes for some reason. Probably because they're on every house and they're always used improperly. I suppose if used properly, they could be okay. I don't know.
Which the funny thing about that funny side note is that the main... Central power?
Something like that. CMP?
CMP. Central main power. That's what it is. They came through. There's a power line that runs through the very front corner of our property here in Maine, and they came through and cleared it all out, and the previous owner complained that they had cut down a bunch of his trees, so they gave a landscaper some money, and guess what they planted all along the driveway?
Like 18 arborvitaes.
So
I've got a bunch of arborvitaes.
And some of them look like they're dying, and she doesn't really care, so.
Yes. But yeah, so I don't know, and I remember my parents came over and got all the rhododendrons, because they love them. And then I wanted to just plant a few things out there so it didn't look empty, because it was kind of bare. But then I knew that the soil needed fixed. So then I started kind of reading up, and we started adding chicken manure and mulch and just kind of improving the soil. And then after a year or two of doing that, I added a bunch of compost and kind of dug it into the soil and worked it up and then put a few plants in, and it just kind of steamrolled from there. And especially, I mean, I like all different kinds of gardening. I love ornamental and edible, probably both equally. I mean, I especially love edible because it's different every year, and there are so many interesting things you can grow and eat. And since I love cooking, I mean, that's kind of what got me into edible gardening is cooking, because I was having trouble finding really good quality vegetables. The stuff you get at the grocery store is just kind of sad and tasteless. And I remember when I was a kid, I loved tomatoes and I ate them like apples. And that's because I always had homegrown tomatoes. And then when I was in college, I remember thinking to myself, it's weird. I don't like tomatoes anymore. I used to love tomatoes, but tomatoes are kind of gross and
tasteless
and kind of weird textured. And
it's like a red sponge.
So I quit eating tomatoes and thought, that's weird. My taste must have changed. I just don't like it. And then one year I grew an heirloom tomato, some Brandywines, I think, and I thought, oh, I love tomatoes. It's just grocery store tomatoes I don't like. And that's pretty much the case for just about any vegetable you get from the grocery store almost, you know?
Well, not only do they only use certain kinds that, you know, don't have blemishes. And
they travel well. They're bred for traveling and not for taste.
Oh, right. And so most of them do travel, and they come from California, and so they're picked, you know...
Well, and I know how I feel after a long flight to Colombia.
You know how you feel right now.
I'm definitely not at my prime that night. So I can imagine that's exactly why stuff tastes terrible.
So the year that you grew the tomatoes, was that the year that we had them on our front porch? Or was that the next year? Did you just grow a few that first year?
I just grew a few in pots, I think, that first year.
Yeah.
In the back, and then the next year we had tons, because our soil was super bad, so I pretty much had to garden in pots if I wanted to grow anything. We put in a couple of raised beds in the back and planted some broccoli and some lettuce and that kind of stuff in the back. We put in one, and then I filled it up, and then we put in another, and I filled it up, and then we put in two more and filled them with strawberries, and that was the first year, so we added four by 10 raised beds that first year, and then I had probably 16 tomatoes in big pots on the front porch, and I planted a couple of things in the front flower bed too, some cabbages, some herbs, and I started incorporating a lot more herbs just into the ornamental flower beds so that I could use them in cooking and stuff. Yeah, and then the next year I took over more of the front yard and put in a bunch of tomatoes and stuff right up on the front hillside for all the neighbors to see. And wouldn't you know
it, did see.
I had a bunch of neighbors that started doing the same thing, and then people started coming over, and I became like the gardener to ask advice for. You know, I mean, but by that time our gardens had really transitioned and grown and were starting to look nice. And then, I mean, everything just kind of grew from there.
And just so you know, this was, what, 5 years ago? 6 years ago now?
Six or
seven?
Probably 7 years ago was the first year I grew tomatoes.
Yeah.
And then 6 years ago, we probably put in the raised beds. I don't know, maybe it was just 5 years ago. I'd have to look at my pictures and see, but...
But yeah, so this has been kind of a recent transformation. And when this all started back up, I asked her the same question I just asked was, you know, have you always liked gardening? Is this something I didn't know about you the first 5 or 6 years that we were married? And
I always did kind of like gardening, because even on our first apartment in Cincinnati, remember I had those planters with herbs?
Mm-hmm.
And then when lived in another apartment, I had a bunch of other potted plants and herbs and trees and stuff on the balcony there. We always had tons of house plants and stuff, but I just was a gardener without land, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and without, you know, time too.
That's true, yeah.
It does take time. You know, as you learn systems and as you learn ways to do it more efficiently and easier and have the land and plants kind of take care of themselves, it takes less time. But early on in our marriage, we didn't have a ton of time to do much of anything besides work and pay off bills, as we talked about last week a little bit. So yeah, and now... You know, and then the blog started, and then it steamrolled from there.
The blog kind of started not too long after the gardening started, because I wanted to keep track of everything, because I'm just terrible when it comes to journaling. You know, the garden journal, everybody tells you should keep one, and I still, except for the blog, I take lots of pictures, so generally that's my journal. I go back through and I try to tag things well so that I can search for them, and that's a good visual reminder. It's still hard for me to write down, you know, what variety I planted, when I seeded it, when it germinated, when I harvested. I just don't remember to do that stuff.
And that's a good tip too, because yes, Thomas Jefferson, you are not.
That's right.
But Thomas
and
Jefferson.
I have read his gardening journals, which are quite detailed. And I think he started when he was like 10 years old, keeping a garden journal, and kept it for his entire life. I mean, fascinating read if you ever want to, you know, dive into something
that's a good
that's
winter
pretty
read.
Garden yeah. geek centric, I think. You have to be quite the gardener to read somebody else's gardening journals.
But that's a good tip, is that you take lots of photos, because it is a visual representation, and then get a good photo program, or actually even cheap photo programs nowadays, because the photo, and make sure, this is the other part of it, make sure you set the clock or the date in your camera, because all that data, it's called EXIF data, and this is where the geeky side of me comes in, and where Susie starts to hear the teacher from Charlie Brown.
The peanuts teacher. Wah, 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 wah.
So the photo has EXIF data that's saved, which typically just saves, you know, how the picture was taken, shutter speed, and that kind of thing. But it also saves the date and the time. And
which
that's
I use all the time.
Yeah, that's how Susie does a lot of her searching. Yeah. You know, when did I plant that? When did I harvest that? When was that? And in a lot of those programs, you can actually go in and do a date-specific search. And then if you also have tags... and do a little photo organization, then
yes,
you
we
can...
should talk about that sometime.
Yeah, we could
tag. As soon as you import your photos, tag them with any topic you can think they are relevant to, So if I'm harvesting potatoes, I will tag all of those pictures with harvest and potato and root vegetable and root crop and, you know, pantry building and nightshade. I will do probably soil too if it's a wider picture that has a lot of soil in it. And
and the good thing about digital photos is they cost you nothing. I mean, once you have the camera, and even if you have just a $150 point and shoot, once you have the camera, all you need is the piece of software, and then you're off and running. And hard drive space is cheap, so just, you know, shoot right until your heart's content, and then...
And you could even upload them all to Flickr, you know, which you can pay. You wouldn't be able to upload them all on the free account, but I mean, it's like... I think if you get a 2-year account, it's $25 a year, and then everything's kind of backed up and on online, and it's a great way to do it.
Mm-hmm. So that brings us to today, which, as we talked about in another episode, when we were talking about moving to Maine, our first episode, we really wanted more land because we wanted to expand. We wanted to do more with gardening, with getting... sort of the what you would think about when you think of a gentleman's farm, I guess.
Yeah.
Only a gentle woman's farm. you know, getting some more animals, getting some more varieties of animals, since all we had was cats and dogs, and they're pretty much useless. So.
Oh, the cats look great in pictures.
Yeah. Lucy does too, but she's still, I mean, really. So. So that brings us to today. And then, so I guess going into my past a little bit, this is going to be a short story. My parents never gardened. When I was in high school, I lived with my grandparents. They kept a garden, but it was very sort of tomatoes, lettuce.
It's pretty classic as far corn. As what you think of a Midwestern. And I don't know if the gardens are like this everywhere, but it's definitely Midwest. You till up a little, like maybe 10 by 10?
Well, theirs is like, 10
in
by
the backyard.
20. It was bigger when I was a kid.
And you
but, yeah.
plant some, you know, you till it up in beginning of June and you plant some beans and you plant some lettuce and you plant some tomatoes and...
And corn.
And corn.
Everybody
and,
tries to grow corn and nobody can
and,
ever do
yeah,
it,
and
it.
Yeah, and they end up buying it down the street.
Yeah.
And then maybe a couple sunflowers and maybe a zucchini if you eat zucchini.
Oh, zucchini,
but,
yeah.
You know, not everybody plants zucchini, but and that's pretty much it as far as edible gardening is concerned.
Which is
one of the things that when I got into edible gardening and I started reading about all of the different heirlooms of, you know, tomatoes of every color, shape, and size, and all of that stuff. It was just like, it was just a whole new world, kind of, because we'd always, I mean, I, you know, I'd grown blue corn and blue potatoes, and I loved looking at all that stuff when I was a kid,
but it's
you kind
just
of
like
forget
going...
about it, and you don't see it in the grocery store, so you don't really think about it. It's kind of like out of sight, out of mind.
Well, and it's just like going to pick out flowers, like you said. You know, my grandma always planted... impatience.
Oh, yeah.
In that front flower bed. And that's, I mean, every single year. And it was always the red ones with the little flecks of white in it. And every once in a while she'd throw in a purple one. And boy, that was crazy. You know, so yeah, that's the way it is with vegetables too. It's just, in fact, when I took some of your heirloom vegetables over to my family's house, they were like, you know, what are these? What's going on here? So yeah, and I didn't even really help out in the garden that much. My grandpa showed me how to use the tractor, and I'd mow the lawn. That was pretty much my extent of gardening, was lawn mowing. But I enjoyed the other things around the house that are definitely going to pay off now. You know, chopping wood and splitting wood and stacking wood and hauling wood and all those types of things. And I said in the previous podcast too that I think in systems, I like to set up systems and set up things that can kind of take care of themselves. So Susie really enjoys carrying watering cans. And the whole time,
I love it.
Exactly. And the whole time I'm thinking to myself, okay, we could set up a pump, and if we did it up above the garden, then we could do a gravity-fed watering system and, you know, this and that and the other thing. And she just says, well, you know, that costs money and that just takes too much.
And carrying water and watering things gives me lots of great quality time to think and builds great biceps, too. I mean,
yeah, but it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, and I could use that time for something else, but I really do enjoy it. And I also love to be, I like to know when I like to water by hand too, because then I know exactly how much water has gone on there, which I feel like I wouldn't be able to tell if we had some other system.
Well, what if,
maybe
what
I'm
if
a
I
micromanager.
What if I hooked up the system through your watering can? I could just cut the bottom of the watering can off, have the
hose
run into the
end. Yeah, but then I don't know
end.
Exactly how much each plant got.
What if I hooked up a water gauge that would measure
each plant?
And it would have a little reset button that you could say, okay, there's a gallon.
That seems expensive.
What did I tell you, folks? That seems expensive. Jeez. Anyway, so yeah, that's I think why we work together well, though, is that you have the experience and you have the knowledge and you have the drive. I don't know what I'm trying to say. That you have the like the, what am I trying to say?
The vision.
Okay. Yeah, I guess. The vision, but also the will or the drive to learn more and to read the books and to
Definitely. Figure
out all these different things and to know all the different plants and to know what they're good for and know what ground cover is good for this and good for that. And then I'm very much the systems thinker where, you know, at our last house, she wanted some rain barrels to catch rainwater. And so I was like, oh, well, this is awesome. So I got 7 barrels, 55-gallon barrels that were plastic, that were food-grade plastic, and, you know, ran the plumbing for all of them and had them all connected so they'd all fill at once off of the back of the garage. And then I was like, well, that's not good enough because it just had a pipe that would come out of it and had a hose connected to it so she could fill up her watering cans. Well, I looked at that, and, you know, I looked at that it took her 2.5 minutes to fill up her watering cans, and I'm like, no, wait a second. Something could be done about this. So I got a water pump, and then I ran another line to the water pump and hooked that up to a hose, and so she could turn on the water pump and water with the hose. And guess what? She never used it.
I used it occasionally.
Oh, well, yeah. But, I mean, it was nice enough that you could run a sprinkler, and then you could run a sprinkler with your rain barrel water,
which
was great.
Which I did sometimes. I used it sometimes.
Yeah. So I think that's why we work well together, and I really think that's why it's going to be neat to see what we do at this place, because with me setting up systems and you with all the knowledge, I really think it's going to work out well. So
let's hope.
Let's hope. And if not, we'll have a lot of fails of the week.
That's right. Which we actually don't have one this week.
Which we don't
do
have
we?
One this week. No. Which is
except for the fact that we couldn't fit everything in our car to come back.
Yeah. Again.
So we left a bunch of stuff at my parents' house.
When we moved to this house, we had the 26-foot Penske, and I was hauling the Mini Cooper behind that.
Junk.
And Susie brought the
our
other car packed out, and we couldn't fit all of our junk in it. So we went back to Ohio.
The funny thing is we don't have that much stuff.
I know. We don't, because we've gotten rid of a lot of it trying to live a more simple life, but it's just amazing how much stuff.
Right, but then sometimes those things require some stuff,
yeah.
Like canning jars.
Well,
and
that's the thing is, yeah.
And owning your own business also requires, you know, I mean, I've got, our office was a lot of boxes of, mm-hmm. you know,
envelopes,
reams of paper and
yeah.
a giant printer and a couple of computers and a bunch of cameras. And
as we were unpacking stuff up at the garage, the, you know, I kept saying box of jars. And we literally have probably 20 of them.
Right. And the funny thing is I don't can that much, but there are a lot. Most of them are my grandmother's jars, both my mom's mom and my dad's mom. And a bunch of them are my mom's jars, which she also gave me. And I don't use them a ton, but we figured we might use them, so we did. I mean, canning jars are one of those things you don't just want to get rid of, because they do come in handy sometimes, you know. So who knows, maybe we'll get tons of maple syrup next spring and we'll be able to fill all those canning jars with maple syrup.
Well, and another thing, and this is another, probably another podcast topic, but you store everything in glass jars.
Yes,
we
absolutely
don't have
everything.
Hardly any plastic.
I have a huge aversion to plastic.
Yeah,
so
but that's probably a whole nother podcast. So we've kind of transitioned to Around the Run, which I need a jingle for. Around the Run.
Maybe we just need to record Lucy running around.
Yeah.
The galloping of the dog.
And so, yeah, we went to Ohio and we came back.
So we were pretty much gone all week.
Yeah. And
we had yesterday and today here in Maine.
And we were basically preparing for a hurricane.
Which we aren't really, because...
Yeah, we're going to get some wind, we're going to get some rain, right. But we're going to be all right. But the one of the things we did while we were in Ohio was we got some ducks.
Yay!
Something Susie's always wanted. So now we have 8 little ducklings running
around.
And
there's a video of them eating on my Flickr photo stream if you want to see it.
Yeah.
They're super cute.
They are super cute. And it's crazy because we picked them up from our friend Beth. And
on Sunday, which we traded maple syrup for them.
Mm-hmm.
So her duckling, she got some ducks. I'm trying to remember, but I think she got ducks this spring or something for her birthday. And she had 2 batches of ducklings, one at the beginning of September, I think, and then one on October 6th. And when she posted a picture of the second, like, batch of ducklings, I said, oh, do you want to trade some maple syrup for these? And she said, oh, I would love to. I was actually thinking about sending you some ducks from the first batch, but I didn't think you'd want to try to wrangle them and the cats on your first trip up to Maine.
Which is true.
So it all worked out. I mean, it's great. It's great to get something like that from someone you know, so you don't have to order them from a hatchery. I mean, and they're just, you know, they don't have to travel in the mail. We went down there and picked them up, and it was great to see, you know, and we chatted with her a little bit about the ducks, their Muscovy ducks. And it was great to just see hers. She kind of has a puddle in her yard, and she has a little, I mean, it's what, like, what'd you say, 6-8 acres,
mm-hmm.
Like a little mini farm. And the ducks just kind of hang out and do their thing. She's got an old, her parents' old chicken coop that she has set up for them, but she said they rarely even go in there at night. They just kind of hang out and do their own thing and take care of themselves. And it was so cute to see the mom walking around with the 3 or 4 remaining ducklings. You know, they're just these tiny little things out running around in her yard. So yeah, we picked up 8 of those, and
it was amazing because we kept them inside under a heat lamp while we were at Susie's mom's house, and they pretty much doubled in size in 4 days.
Yeah.
And they've pretty much doubled again, I think.
Yeah, I think
they're,
so too.
They're, and you know, that was a week ago that we picked them up. It's, and they're crazy big.
Yeah. And we put them outside once. My mom had a cold frame, and you know, we didn't want to keep them all cooped up because they're used to just running around and being free. So we put them out in my mom's cold frame, we chained the dog out there to watch them because my mom's neighbor has a bunch of cats and we didn't want them to eat the ducklings. So they spent all day one day out there running around, and then we've been putting them outside here in Maine. We said, jerry-rigged some fencing or some shelving to make some fencing, which you can see on my face, which you can see on my Facebook page. I'll upload them to my Flickr too, if you want to see that. It's pretty funny. But yeah, and we, you know, we harvested a bunch of greens from the garden and would chop it up and feed it to the ducklings, and some scrambled eggs they got. And I read somewhere that potatoes are really great for ducks, so we were giving them mashed potatoes, which they love. That's their favorite thing, is mashed potatoes. But yeah, it was kind of funny because some lady on my Facebook page, when I posted pictures of their breakfast, which was a bunch of chopped salad greens and dandelions and clover and marigolds and all kinds of stuff and some scrambled eggs, and she said, oh, but you're probably giving them, you know, like chick feed too, aren't you? And I said, well, no, they're eating greens. And
since they get that in the wild so
eggs.
Often.
Because I talked to Beth about that, and she said, oh, no, I don't feed them anything. They just kind of fend for themselves out there and eat bugs and grass and weeds and stuff. So she said if it's really dry or if the grass isn't doing well, I'll throw out a handful or two of cracked corn. But she said, no, I don't feed them anything. So and she didn't feed the ducklings anything either. So I just thought that was funny that the lady was all, you know, oh, I'm sure, what are you feeding them? Some chick feed?
No, dog food. yeah. And
they're thriving. I mean, yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, we try to feed our pets like we feed ourselves with just real food as close to nature as it gets, you know. We don't feed our pets kibble unless we're traveling and we're not going to be here, then we leave bowls of it for the cats inside. But we feed our pets when we're here. Most of our pets get a raw food diet, and the same goes for, you know, the ducks. They're going to be eating that, and the chickens, we're kind of transitioning to that too. You know, they forage for a lot of their food when we're here and we let them out, but you know, they do get some chicken food when we're not here. So
another thing that we brought back was our mower.
Because, which we had been sorely missing, and with all the rain, the grass here was like a foot tall or 18 inches tall.
And it was long when we got here, and so it's been a month since it's been cut. And
a beautiful, warm 50-degree afternoons
with
lots of rain. And
yeah, so we brought back our mower, but I think it was it when we were home that it broke? Or was it right before we left for
like
Maine?
The two or three times before we left for Maine.
So before we left for Maine, our self-propelled portion of our mower broke. And it's the cable. And I haven't taken it apart yet to fix it. But I know what's wrong with it. And I'm afraid that it's going to be like one of those deals where you have to replace the whole transmission. I was looking it up online and found out that it's about $70 for the whole transmission for the mower. So that's something I have to do. But we brought it back, and so I started mowing yesterday.
You should say making mulch, because we're chopping it up and picking up the leaves and using it to just mulch everything.
Right. And when you have about, I don't know how much we have, 6 acres cleared? That's not, I don't know. We'll have to measure it someday.
I don't know as far as mowing is
concerned.
We have
a lot. So
it's probably a couple acres of grass to mow.
And it's a 21-inch push mower, you know. So I'm sure the neighbors will come up and laugh at me with their tractors and such and so forth. But
we own it, and it's free, and we don't have a tractor.
And it's good exercise. And that's what I have to keep telling myself. We also brought back a trailer full of plants. So we went back to the house in Ohio and dug up a whole, besides the mower and a couple other things, the trailer was completely packed with plants. And so the past 2 days, because of this hurricane coming, we wanted to get those back in the ground so that they wouldn't be, you know, out of the ground and die. And so that's what we've spent the past 2 days, or that's what Susie spent the past 2 days doing, is getting all those plants back in the ground and mulching around them and
watering
them
and getting them ready to survive the winter here.
Yeah, and everything seemed to perk back up, everything that you planted yesterday. What all did you bring back?
A ton of hydrangeas. I have quite a collection of hydrangeas back in Ohio, I think over 30 different varieties. So I brought back, I think, one of each of those. A lot of them I did as starts, so they're just little tiny rootings that I brought back. But some of them I had fairly small shrubs where there were little rootings last year. So they're just little shrubs that are, I mean, barely a foot tall. So I have a bunch like that, and then just a lot of, I'm kind of a collector of interesting plants, so I have a lot of starts that I wanted to get. I have, I think, 6 different kinds of creeping and carpet thyme back in Ohio, so I grabbed a little start of each of those, and my Egyptian walking onions, and I have some hops flowering oregano that I wanted to get, and some pink flowering strawberries and some little yellow wonder strawberries, and I have probably 20 different varieties of hostas, so I brought back starts from a lot of those varieties, as well as, let me see, oh, my perennial leeks, I brought back a ton of those, probably way too many. I should have nixed one of those containers and gotten the others, but so I've planted a huge section of perennial leeks here, which I wanted to. I mean, we'll eat those. Those will grow, and we'll eat those all spring. Once the storage onions are done from the pantry, we'll be using leeks until we can get onions out of the garden again. So, I mean, those are great. Those are valuable. We eat tons of those, so I wanted to get a bunch of those. And plus, I'm trying to propagate those so that I can, you know, give away starts of them, because they're kind of hard to find. So, and what else did I bring? Anyways, and I healed all those in, kind of, you know, planted them in a long row in the big upper vegetable garden. And then I gave them all a watering with a half-strength kelp meal, like liquid kelp mixed in with the water, which, you know, whenever you transplant, I'll put a link in the show notes. I've written an article over at Ethel about tips for transplanting success. Giving your plants a watering with a weak fish emulsion for a couple weeks after you transplant is going to do wonders to help them bounce back. But because they've lost a lot of roots, and the roots aren't, I mean, they haven't grown out and they're not in contact with a lot of soil, especially if you dig them up and a lot of the soil falls off as you're traveling or whatever.
Or you don't dig a big enough root ball.
The feeding them with a light fish emulsion or a light kelp emulsion at half strength gives the plant what it needs to set to, it gives it some nourishment. It helps it put down the roots and root in a lot faster. I mean, I rarely lose a plant once I started doing this. It just really helps the plants bounce back very quickly. So I would highly recommend doing that. And I'll put a link in the show notes for the article I wrote about transplanting, and some of the other mulch also helps a lot. But a light watering with fish or kelp emulsion is by far the best thing you're ever going to do for your plants when you're transplanting.
And so that's what's been going on around the run this week. And we also got a ton of listener questions this week. And those are great. We love them. Keep them coming. If they're, if you ask a question on one of the blog posts, you'll probably get a reply on the blog, and you might hear it on the show as well. So Dave from CleanSlateFarms.com wrote, "Susie, I just saw your Sweet Success post,
which was about sweet potatoes,
and was impressed by the photos. What I could see, at least, of your garden and potting shed." I was impressed by the photos, what I could see at least, of your gardening and potting shed. From what I see, it is what I'm planning to build. Do you have a post? I did not see one. Or plans for the one that you and Mr. Chiotes built, or photos?
And this would be my mom's greenhouse potting shed, which I really do need to do a post specifically about this, because people always ask about it when they see little bits and pieces of it in various pictures.
And we actually took a lot of pictures of the internals this time, didn't we?
I have a few of the bench, and I do have pictures of when we put it up. My mom purchased it 2-3 years ago, I think. And it came kind of as like a kit. Mm-hmm. And so we went over and we helped my parents assemble it. And it is a really, really nice shed. I can look it up, and we can put a link in the show notes to the place she got it from. It's a place in Canada that makes them. They're out of cedar. And it's really fantastic. She's had great, I think a part was missing, and she called the company and they sent it off right away. And then because of the hassle, they like gave her a free cupola for the top, I think. I mean, they've been really great, really great company for her to work with. She loves the shed. It is a really nice shed. You know, if you don't have the skills to build one yourself from scratch, it's definitely, I think, a great one to invest in. It's going to last forever. It seems like it's well made, and my mom really likes hers. I like it a lot too. It's really nice.
So we'll do a post on that someday. And I think we did take a few photos, because I was looking at it when we were back this time and just noticing how well it was constructed, but how simply it was constructed as well. So us being us, we'll probably build one ourselves.
And if I don't, I'll look through my pictures, and maybe that's something I can do when we go back at Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
I can take some pictures specifically of her greenhouse and do a post about it for people that are interested in that.
That's a good idea. And Dave also asked, Finally, what software and equipment do you use for the podcast? I am thinking about starting one in the future, and I'm doing research on what would make the job easier and more professional. And I guess I'll take this answer.
I was going to say. I would say you need to buy it, Mr. Chiotz.
Hey, Dave, if you want to hire me, I will come to wherever you are if you pay travel expenses and an hourly rate, and we can hook you up. We are using USB microphones. They're actually Samson CO1Us. We have four of them, and I purchased them a while ago because we used to do another podcast for the last career that we were in. And so we use those. We have two of those hooked into our into my MacBook Pro. It's an Apple laptop. And because we're using the MacBook Pro, we are using GarageBand to record into. And I do most of my editing in GarageBand as well. If you need, because the MacBook Pro only has two USB ports, if you need more than that, you can use a powered hub. You have to use a powered hub because the mics need power. And then really, the publishing of the podcast is a whole nother deal. We're using WordPress, and we're using the Blueberry podcast plugin. And then I just found out today, and I'm actually, this will be interesting, and tell me, and this is for everyone, tell me if you have any problems downloading this episode, because I'm actually going to try to upload it somewhere else. Another podcast that I listened to, I found out that they actually upload their audio files to archive.org, and that would take some of the load off of our server, because of the podcast this month, the Chiotz Run / CultivateSimple.com blog pulled down over or close to 300 gigabytes of data, which is a lot. So we're going to try a little bit different. So if you have any problems downloading the episode this week or listening to it on the website, let me know, because then we'll find something else to do. So Dave, if you have any more questions, email show@cultivatesimple.com, and I'll be happy to help you out with anything that I can. The next question comes from Rusty. And it says, my goal for next season was to do raised beds because of a weed control problem. I never seem to be able to keep them under control. Listening to your cover crop podcast has inspired me to try again. But I'm also wondering if you have ever used cover crops between the rows during the growing season. I remember hearing this sometime before, but can't remember where. Yeah, so that's the first part of the question.
You certainly can use them between the rows. A lot of people do that.
Are there certain ones that are good for foot traffic, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, no cover crop is going to take a ton of foot traffic before it plants just do not like that, and
right.
Probably some sort of a low growing clover. But the problem with that is they are often perennial. So, I mean, which isn't a problem if you want to keep it there, if you use the same footpaths all the time. This spring, I should say, last winter, I planted some fall green manure crop, which has a couple different kinds of rye in it, a winter rye and then like a grass rye. And when we cut it down with the scythe, and then we just kind of dug out the rows where we were going to plant the plants, and I just left the cover crop intact. Because we had cut it, most of it died. There were a few bits of the lower rye that grew up, but then I just threw down all of the cuttings of the rye and the vetch and all of that kind of in the walkways and used that as a walkway. So yeah, you can use a cover crop. I would recommend, however, using some sort of a mulch. Grow some sort of a cover crop in your garden over the winter, or I mean, it's good to kind of let your grow a cover crop in your garden and not grow crops all the time. And then you can cut that down and use that as mulch. Use some straw, leaves, grass, any kind of mulch you can put down is going to be beneficial at helping suppress the weeds. You can even use like cardboard underneath, although it can get slippery when it gets wet. So be careful and mindful of that. I do that sometimes, especially in areas where I have really heavy weed competition in new garden areas. That has come in handy, but I have almost broken a leg several times slipping on the cardboard when it's wet.
Shredded newspaper, straw.
Cardboard underneath some straw or some shredded leaves and grass is going to be really great at suppressing some of those heavy perennial weeds.
And make it thick.
Yeah, I think a lot of people go too lean when it comes to the mulch, especially in the walkways. And her next question kind of piggybacks on this. She said, I'm also wondering if you have any advice for the Canadian thistle. It's a weed that keeps taking over my garden, and that is quite a tenacious weed. We dealt with that a lot back in Ohio on our front hillside, and it's a really tough plant to get rid of, but as with most weeds, my best advice is to be
vigilant,
be consistent,
yeah,
about pulling it out. And because the problem with Canadian thistles is that there's kind of like a big taproot. And then when you pull out the thistle, it never or rarely gets all of the root. There's always going to be a little bit down there. So another one's going to come up, or two are going to come up in its place, or three are going to come up in its place. But if you keep pulling those before they reach about 6 inches tall, and I just throw them down right where they are, because another thing about Canadian thistle is it doesn't really love super rich soil. It has a tendency to grow in those disturbed areas with kind of lean, yeah, clay, kind of bad soil. So mulching heavily, adding amendments to the soil, and just being really vigilant about pulling them every couple weeks, get out there and pull them up and throw them down and use them as mulch. That's really going to help. We started doing that how many years ago? Because we had them really bad on our front hillside, mm-hmm, and kind of in the back of the garden.
I mean, we did it as long as we had our house, so.
Right, and we were just getting to the point where there are only a few up there, and I only have to pull them a couple times in the summer.
And we really found that pulling them after a really heavy rain,
you can get bigger pieces of the,
yeah,
of the root. So,
and also,
yeah,
taking a trowel, sinking it as deep as you can. And I mean deep,
and
as you can, right beside the weed,
out, yeah,
and then kind of pushing down on the handle so that it pops the root. You could get a lot of it as well.
Right. And ours were growing in an area where it was like the front hillside. It was a rock garden, so there were a bunch of huge rocks up there. So we couldn't really plant a cover crop. It was kind of not the right place for that. But if you have it in like a big edible garden where you've plowed it up or tilled it up, definitely do let the garden go fallow for a season or two and plant some rye or some Sudan grass or something that's going to grow really fast and kind of shade out the thistles. And if you do that for a season or two, you're going to definitely lessen them. But they are a really tough weed to get rid of. But it can be done.
And get some thick leather gloves, because
exactly
they can hurt.
Yes, they can.
Yeah, so I had another thought about that, but I lost it. So moving on, Carrie says...
it's kind of the same question.
I live in North Dakota and have some... Oh, it is.
Some of the toughest thistles in the world.
It seems like, anyways. And And I was wondering if you have any tips to get rid of them once and for all. Yeah, that's kind of the same question.
Consistent is get rid of any weed. If you never let it go to flower, or to never,
to
ever, ever. And if you do see those little flowers coming, cut them off and burn them.
It makes you feel good too. Just burn.
It makes you feel good. But yeah, I mean, the reason you want to continually pull them a bunch of times throughout the summer is because you're going to weaken the roots, because the plants, when they grow up, I mean, obviously, you know, they get sun, blah, 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 and it feeds the roots and strengthens the roots. So with a lot of tenacious perennial weeds, if you can keep the top growth cut back and pulled, eventually the roots are going to exhaust all their nutrition and they will lose strength, and you can eventually get rid of them. I know a lot of the creeping grasses are kind of like that too. Any weed, really. If you keep your garden weeded for a season or two and mulch, after a year or two, it's amazing the difference that some consistent weeding year one, year two, and never letting anything go to seed is really going to make it's really worth the effort the first year or two. It's kind of a pain, but it's worth it. It definitely is worth it. I bet I did that. I remember, I mean, we had tons and tons and tons of weeds when we first moved in there because the people would always spray. The soil was bad. You know, and I double dug the beds and like brought up a bunch of weed seeds from the seed bank. And for 2 years, I weeded consistently. I went out, I think every week I would go out and just kind of weed through things. So it didn't take me that long to weed, but I was doing it every single week. And I did that for 2 years. And then we mulched heavily. And then, yeah. After that, it really doesn't. I can go through and pretty much weed the entire yard, garden areas in less than a couple hours, probably, because I just don't have that many weeds. I can weed my front foundation gardens in probably 15 or 20 minutes because I've been consistent in the past, and I just don't have weeds there anymore. So it really does pay off. I mean, it'll take you a summer or two, and then after that, you're going to save so much time. It is really worth it.
And like you said, too, a lot of weeds there's another word that's used in permaculture called opportunistic species, which basically, you know, things that you mentioned, if the soil is bad or if there's certain things lacking, then certain weeds grow, and that's because they thrive on those environments. And so it can actually be a way to tell you, hey, you know, this soil needs something.
Right, because, yeah, and look up the weed, because some weeds grow in compacted, terrible soil. So if you've got tons of those weeds, if you start a series of adding mineral and rock powders to your soil, as well as adding mulch and other things that aren't going to improve your soil, eventually those weeds aren't going to thrive there because it's not their preferred condition.
Right.
And some weeds are actually herbs, and not all weeds are bad. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, I pull out the Canadian thistles because they're a pain and you really don't want them going to seed. But, you know, other weeds like lamb's quarters, I leave that and we eat it, or sometimes I'll pull it up right before it flowers. But, so, you know, not all weeds are bad. Some weeds are beneficial. Dandelions are extremely beneficial for your garden. So I always leave all the dandelions. They do a great job at bringing up calcium from down deep in the soil and bringing it up for other plants to use. So they also produce a lot of early pollen for the pollinators. So, I mean, some weeds you learn to look at from a different light and accept them for what they are. Weeds like Creeping Charlie, some people hate it, but I love it. It's a really beneficial plant for your grass, for your garden. I kind of pull it out of the garden beds, but I let it grow in the grass wherever it wants to grow. And it's pretty easy to just kind of, a couple times a summer, pull it out of the flower beds a little bit and just let it grow in the grass. And having a lot of different varieties of plants growing it, like in the lawn portion, is going to make it a lot healthier and a lot more likely to survive droughts and, you know, bad weather conditions and stuff.
Me being a conspiracy theory lover, I think that Scotts just calls things weeds that are common.
Yeah.
So that they can sell you stuff. So yeah.
Right, things like plantain. I always let the plantain, the broadleaf, and the narrowleaf grow in my garden because it's so beneficial. If you're out working and you get stung by a bee, you can grab a plant, chew it up, or if you get cut or a mosquito bite, and put it on there, and it does a great job. It's like a great anti-inflammatory, anti-itch kind of thing that's really beneficial to have around.
And it's funny because whenever your neighbor's lawn looks terrible because they have perfect, you know, Kentucky bluegrass and the drought hits and everything turns brown, your lawn will be nice and green because it's actually, you know, has a lot of biodiversity. And
I did a post on my blog about this with pictures and talked about my mixed herbal lawn. And my lawn looked great all summer, oddly enough. We had a horrible drought in Ohio and got just, I mean, probably less than 2 inches of rain in June, July, and August. And severe, severe drought, and our lawn looked great.
What was that you said? A multi?
I call it a mixed herbal lawn, which
there
is
you go.
You know, it's one of those things to so you don't say, "Oh yeah, my weedy organic my lawn." Call it a mixed herbal lawn, because then people are like, "Oh, there's a term for it. It must be hip and cool," which it is. But that's like my mom had a portion of her yard with an orchard. She didn't want to mow her orchard anymore, so she just let it naturalize, and that's what she told her neighbors. So, I mean, who can argue with that? Oh, yeah, I let it naturalize for all the wildlife and the birds and all of that. Who's going to argue with that? Because then they sound like an idiot if they're like, if you're like, oh, yes, it's a mixed herbal lawn for the benefit of the bees. Haven't you heard that the population of bees are declining? We should all do a mixed herbal lawn to benefit them. Nobody's going to say anything, because then they look like an idiot.
That's good spin. I like it. Good advertising.
You just have to know how to label well things done. Properly.
That's right. So that takes us to the book of the week. And so Susie's got one that she actually, the book that we talked about, was that 2 weeks ago?
Yes. The small scale poultry flock.
Poultry flock, which we gave away a copy of on the show. He mentioned another book, which Susie had heard about before, but just never got around to reading. And
he talked about this book a couple times, and the things he talked about in there, like growing a lot of potatoes and squash to feed your flock in the winter, were really interesting to me. That's something I want to do a little bit more, is grow a little bit more of the stuff that we feed the animals around here. The funny thing is when the book arrived, because I ordered it and it was here Friday when we got back from Ohio. The funny thing is, when I started reading the first chapter, I actually checked this book out of the library a couple years ago, but I read like 5 pages and was just like, ugh, you know how sometimes you just cannot take a writer's tone
or a topic that they're talking about.
I mean, it's a lot about being a resilient gardener and food production and self-reliance in uncertain times is kind of the title. Let me say that again.
Well, it is
the title. Resilient gardener, food production and self-reliance in uncertain times, which, I mean, I love to garden and I know it prepares me for things, but I'm not, you know, gardening because I think the apocalypse is coming or anything, and that's not necessarily, you know, I don't have a bunch of beans in the basement.
Although we do believe that if there is an apocalypse, it will be a zombie apocalypse.
That's right, so. Yes. And we'll just put treadmills around our house and we'll be safe.
Yep, treadmills. That's the answer.
But yeah,
folks,
so I was a little put off by, I don't know, it's just one of those books I got and I just couldn't get into it in the first chapter. And a lot of times I still plow through these, but there was something about this book that I was like, maybe I was busy and I had a bunch of other books that seemed way more interesting to me, but so I just returned it to the library. So when I first started reading it, I was like, oh great, I remember this book. But since it was mentioned so much in the other book and the topics really sounded interesting, I'm excited to get to those sections and read a little bit more about it. So yeah, so that's what I'm reading. I'm about a fourth of the way through it right now. And it's kind of interesting. It's a pretty wordy, thick book. So unless you're a big garden geek, you might want to...
You are a big garden geek, aren't you?
I am a big garden geek.
Was there another book that you were going to recommend and you said, but I don't know if I want to recommend it because it's just... It's very...
The garlic book. But yeah, I mean, this one's interesting. If, you know, I don't know. It's one of those, I'd get it from the library. I don't think I would, I mean, I did buy it, but.
I don't think I would buy it, but I have it here in my hands.
But, you know, if I'm going to do the, what was our thing? We were going to come up with a buy.
Oh, yeah.
Borrow or. I don't know. Maybe
pass. I
think. Buy, borrow, or pass. Which isn't that catchy. I would borrow this one from the library.
Buy, borrow, or bust.
If I were you. Unlike, you know, the small scale poultry flock, if you want to have chickens or are dreaming of having chickens, buy that book poultry, and you will never need another poultry book. But this one, I don't know. It's a borrow. Let's see if you like it.
Get it from the library. But if you want to buy it or if you want to buy anything from Amazon, that's one way that you can support the show. We have been watching our server meltdown and different things happening. And all this does take time. I mean, putting the podcast together and obviously Susie writing the blog every day, it does take time. But we love doing it and we want to do it for you guys so that we can give you more information, so that we can get more out there, so that whether you're just starting out, whether you just want to, you know, you're thinking about growing a couple tomatoes next summer, or if you've been gardening your whole life and you're learning new things, we get, it seems like lately, the past week or two, and because of the podcast, I think people are really appreciating that, you know, you're putting the time into this. Mm-hmm. And we got a really nice email today that said, you know, I meant to write you last Thanksgiving because when I was thinking about things that I was thankful for, you know,
your blog came up first in my mind.
Yeah. Cause she said that, so, you know, she sits down every morning with her cup of coffee and reads the blog post and she just gets so much out of it.
Puts a lot of pressure on me.
You got to up your game.
Now I feel bad when I take a day off and just post a picture of next week. People are like drinking their coffee and expecting something big.
Yeah, it's
all
just
they
Dexter.
Get is Dexter.
It's Dexter laying in front of the hot box like he was today. But it does take time and it does take a lot of energy. And so if you'd like to support the podcast, you can use our Amazon affiliate link, and we do make a few cents off each purchase, and that helps out a lot. Another thing you can do, and something I'm going to ask you to do, if you like this podcast, this is the fourth episode, and like I said, you know, we're going to be doing more topics and getting into more things like that. We've mainly been talking about ourselves, except for one episode. But you can give us a review on iTunes. I know a lot of you are subscribed through iTunes, and that's how you get the podcast. If you go into iTunes, if you click back over, and you can write a review and give us a star rating. If you're going to give us anything less than 5 stars, then just forget I said any of this. I'm just kidding. But give us a review over there, because I know that helps out when people are looking for other gardening podcasts. I know that's one of the things I do whenever I'm looking at any podcast. I usually read the reviews to see what people say about it, and also see, you know, how regularly it's updated. So another way that you can find out how to support the show is by going to cultivatesimple.com/support. And there's a couple links there, including our Amazon affiliate link. And if you just bookmark that Amazon link, and anytime you go to Amazon, use that. It doesn't cost you anything. And another thing that we've been talking about, and I just want to kind of throw it out here, and I know probably by the end of the show here, nobody's listening, and that's okay. But another thing that we've been talking about is possibly putting together some ebooks. If you don't know what an ebook is, it's just what it sounds like. It's a book that's digital, downloaded off of a website that you read on your computer or on a Kindle or on an iPad or iPhone or, you know, just on your computer screen. But we've been talking about different ways that we could possibly support the blog, not by ads, because we don't want to do that, but by giving you something that would be useful. And so one of the things that we thought would be good would be ebooks on certain topics. And so I just want to find out if there is any interest in that. So if you
and
could
what
leave...
topics you might be interested in.
Right. So if you could go over to the show notes, if you go to cultivatesimple.com, and go to episode 4 in the comments, just leave a quick note, you know, yes, I'd be interested in ebooks, and here's a topic I'd like to see covered. That would be great. And I think that if there is interest in that, and one other thing too, just so we can get an idea, let us know how much you'd be willing to pay, for an ebook. And what we're thinking is not, you know, 200 page novels, but more short, topical, you know, how to plant garlic or the life cycle of garlic, getting cloves of garlic, how to plant it, how, you know, when is it time to harvest, how do I store it, you know,
what
do
I do throughout the season as it's growing, what do I watch for, what can
I
expect?
That and photos and everything, you know, it'll be really nicely done, but very topical. How much would you pay for that? And if there is interest in it, if it's something that we think, you know, putting the time into it will be worth it, and being able to give you something that you can use, but then us being able to make, you know, some money off of it so that we can continue to do these things and continue to put out more information, let us know if you think that's something that you'd want to do. And we're going to start moving in that direction to set that up and to even formalize, maybe have a page where people can submit suggestions and, you know, other people can get on there and vote for the ones that they want to see. And then those would be the ones that we would write. So we've got a couple of other ideas. It's easy for me to say a couple other ideas like that. And, but we want to sort of put that one out there and see if there's any interest in it so we know which ones are worth our time. And if you do have any other comments or questions, you can leave them in the show notes, in the comments.
Right. If you have any great advice on dealing with Canadian thistles or any of the topics we discuss, or if you have questions you want answered, definitely.
And if your answer's Roundup, just forget about it because we're going to delete it.
And that doesn't work. So.
Yeah, that's right. Or you can email us at show@cultivatesimple.com. Be sure to, you know, like us on Facebook, to like Chiyot's Run on Facebook, because we're constantly posting on there, and that's probably where the hurricane updates are going to come.
If you're not on there, you have not seen a lot of pictures of cute little ducklings all week.
Yeah, that's right.
And videos of them eating, which was really their mashed potatoes. So you've missed out if you're not on there this week.
Yeah, and we'll probably be posting hurricane updates all week, which if you're listening to this in the future, will not make
any sense whatsoever.
It's going to
be very anticlimactic. These storms that they hype up, nothing ever happens.
It's just that the weather guys never get any...
They don't get any TV time, so...
They don't get any fun, you know? So it's like it's like when a snowstorm hits. You know, they're top of the news, and they get... So, yeah. You know, and I hope that nothing major happens, and I hope that if you are in the New York, you know, North Carolina, down in that area... keep down, drive inland, do whatever you need to do. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week. You know, we'll see if we pulled our cars in the garage and batten down the hatches.
Away.
So we're ready for it. Let's see what happens. So, but whatever we're doing this week, whether that's putting the storm windows in to try and keep water out of the house,
or making some kimchi.
Or making kimchi, which was on the list. We're definitely going to cultivate simple.